Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
So glad you could be with us for this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry. With me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. We are continuing to look at a story that broke last week and was carried over several media outlets dealing with this charge of fraud that has been leveled against the president of the Mormon Church, Thomas S. Monson. There was a judge in London who has summoned President Monson to appear in court in March. It was based on a complaint that was made by two men, Stephen Bloor and Christopher Ralph, and they are saying that Thomas Monson is guilty of fraud because the Mormon Church does not tell new members what they're actually getting involved in before they start having to pay the mandatory tithe if they hope to receive the best Mormonism has for them. Now, mind you, when we say mandatory tithe, we are not saying that just because you join the Mormon Church, they're going to automatically start dinging your paycheck. That's not what we're saying. We're merely saying that if you hope to receive the perks and benefits that are often selling points by the Mormon missionaries, such as if you join us, you can be with your family forever, or you can be exalted, or if you have a more honest Mormon missionary, you could be a god of your own world somewhere. That is only a perk that comes after you are a faithful tithe payer, 10% of your income. You also are drawn into the Mormon Church based on things like, well, Joseph Smith was a true prophet because he gave us an ancient religious work known as the Book of Mormon. He was also able to translate the Book of Abraham into a part of our scripture as well. And these are very questionable issues. Historical and doctrinal things that, of course, it contains are very questionable. And so this is where they get the idea of fraud. Now, there was a lot of misunderstanding that was going out, and we were hoping to clarify some of these things by actually reading a statement by the two plaintiffs. It was a joint statement that has appeared on Stephen Bloor's website under the title, My Reasons for Supporting Tom Phillips in His Fraud Case Against President Thomas S. Monson. There's a joint statement by Christopher Ralph and Stephen Bloor, and we want to look at what they have to say in this. And I don't get the impression from reading this that they are really just trying to be mean-spirited or anything. It sounds to me when I read this that they really are genuinely concerned about other people joining the Mormon Church, finding out its truth claims are not accurate, and seeing people have to go through the anguish and suffering that they themselves went through as members of the Mormon Church. So in this joint statement, they start off with these, I guess you could call them like bullet points, even though there's no bullet point, but they are explaining what it is not, what this case is not.
Yeah, it's under a section called Difficulties in Leaving the Mormon Church. The first one, it is not per se an attack on Mormonism as a belief system. We believe that as long as people are first made aware of all of the relevant historical facts which ought to inform their decision making, it becomes solely their choice and their business if they wish to hand over their money, time, and efforts to the LDS Church. When comprehensive disclosure becomes a normal practice, we will find no fault. We accept that some will choose to believe whatever they will, despite mountains of contrary evidence, and that is their inalienable right. Nor, as far as we are concerned, is this a personal vendetta against Thomas Monson. We do not know him, and he has never met us. Unfortunately, he happens to be the man, at this point, who occupies the church president's office, and so the summonses have been served upon him. On a personal basis, we feel compassion for a man who, of his advanced years, allegedly not in the best of health, who has recently lost his wife. He has been part of our Mormon culture. We feel no personal animosity towards him. Then the next one says, this is not being done out of anger, but out of concern for the many who otherwise will perhaps one day feel hurt and betrayed, as we presently do. This action is being taken over what we consider to be unethical and fraudulent practices. Our view is based upon our own experiences and also those of others within the Mormon community.
Now, let me stop you there, because living here in Utah, as we've said, we've seen this happen to people. And you know what, folks? It could be that one of the reasons why Steve Bloor now is a professed atheist and Tom Phillips is a professed atheist is maybe because of what they went through in this shock once they found out that the faith that they had trusted in wasn't accurate. And we see many people coming out of the Mormon church make that kind of entrance into atheism, thinking, well, if the Mormon church isn't true, then no religion can be true.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, we see that way too many times. Now, I don't know what Steve Bloor's personal story is and how he arrived where he is right now, but we have seen that here in Utah, in the heart of Mormonism. Now, let me say this. We don't know what's going to happen with this case, but it certainly is bringing this problem to the forefront. I don't think it's going to help the Mormon Church's conversion rate. I don't think it's going to boost that by any stretch of the imagination. Perhaps it will cause the general public to be more cautious before they embrace the message that the young missionaries are bringing to their door. Let me also say, we do not believe that the missionaries are a part of this fraud. Yes, they are carrying a fraudulent message, but in talking with the hundreds of missionaries that we have talked to, most of them are very nice young people who really believe what they're saying is true because they themselves haven't taken the time to study it out and to look very carefully at what the church is telling them to say. They have a mission handbook, Preach My Gospel, and in it, it basically tells the missionaries what they are supposed to tell prospective converts or investigators. I don't think they're lying. It's not that I haven't had a missionary ever try to pull a whopper on me before, because I have, but for the most part, they're very sincere young people that are merely trying to share what they believe to be true. Now, in the last broadcast, last week, I had erroneously thought that part of this case involved tax evasion charges. That's not true. Apparently, tax evasion is an issue, but that's not something that is a part of this particular case. Now, David Tweed, on his blog site, Mormon Disclosures, titled Finding Hidden Finances, Documents, and Other Disclosures on Mormon Leaders, he talks about the fact that the Mission President's Handbook has been, I assume by what he says, has been given over to the British version of the IRS. So they know about this. Now, why is that important? The Mission President's Handbook makes it very clear that mission presidents are told to tell people that they are merely volunteers for the church while at the same time receiving huge amounts of compensation. And Eric and I, when we did a series of shows on this last January, we just went through and very conservatively listed how much these perks probably would add up if, a mission president being where? Here in Provo.
Mm-hmm.
Provo, Utah, and it came out to just over $100,000. Okay, that's quite a bit when you're telling people you're getting nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, Tom Phillips, according to this blog, reports that he worked as the financial director for the LDS Church corporate entities and has said concerning the unpaid taxes on mission president account reimbursements and stipends. This is what Tom Phillips has said, and this is why I think this has got the attention of the British government. Phillips says, it was discussed at a first presidency meeting with the presiding bishopric, and they decided to continue not reporting and pay any fines when and if they were discovered.
Hmm.
This, according to Phillips, this is blatant tax evasion, a criminal activity in the UK. I never kept any documentary evidence, but this handbook would be incriminating for them. We have that handbook, and in Appendix B, under Family Finances, it tells the mission president the different benefits that he will be receiving while he serves in that capacity for the Mormon Church. Now, many of them are very logical. Medical expenses and things like that. Anything having to do with travel expenses while they're doing the duty of a mission president. Then it has some other ones that are kind of questionable. Elementary and secondary school expenses for tuition, fees, books and materials, undergraduate tuition at an accredited college, support for children serving full-time missions. But here's the problem we find. It actually tells the mission president that they are not supposed to talk about the benefits they get. Under tax issues on page 82, it says, because you are engaged in volunteer religious service. Now, that word volunteer needs to be defined, and I don't think the British government is going to define it the same way as the Mormon Church defines it. It says, because you were engaged in volunteer religious service, no employer-employee relationship exists between you and the church. As a result, any funds reimbursed to you from the church are not considered income for tax purposes. They are not reported to the government, and taxes are not withheld with regard to these funds. To avoid raising unnecessary tax questions, please follow these guidelines closely. And there's three bullet points. Do not share information on funds you receive from the church with those who help you with financial or tax matters. That is certainly not something I would follow. I'd tell my tax guy everything. Any exceptions, it says, should be discussed with the church tax division. Never represent in any way that you are paid for your service. If you are required to file an income tax report for any other purposes, do not list any funds you receive from the church, regardless of where you serve or where you hold citizenship. The British government knows about this. And from what we understand, Tom Phillips has stated, and it's reported on this David Tweed's blog site, the tax evasion case will be brought up by the government later this year. However, it goes on to say Monson won't be charged personally with that. It will be a corporation, and the penalty will be a fine. Monson can claim he left all that to his accountants. Also, the size of the two cases, $10 million of tax evasion versus $300 million in tithing fraud. Now, that would be the case that's going on now. And it says, see the difference? On tax evasion, he does not get prosecuted. The COP, or the Corporation of Presidency, I think is what that stands for, pays a fine. On fraud, if convicted, he goes to prison and could be ordered to pay tithing to victims and have hundreds of millions of church money confiscated. So it's quite interesting, but I think we need to know exactly why this case has been made, what the reasons were behind it, and whether it actually all happens. Only time will tell.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism. How would you like to have Mormonism Research Ministry address your church on the subject of Mormonism? MRM's Bill McKeever and Eric Johnson have spoken at many Christian churches all over the country. You see, they can tailor their presentation to meet your church's needs. Anything from a one-day basic introduction to a weekend symposium. You'll find these PowerPoint presentations clear, articulate, and presented in a Christ-honoring fashion. So let your pastor know today that you'd like to have MRM speak at your church. Write us at contact@mrm.org.